Hello, today is Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. This is an oral history interview with Malela Chikasa Anana. We are here at her home in Madison. My name is Troy Reeves with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Also here is Michaela Sullivan Fowler from Ebeling Library on the UW-Madison campus. So I wanted to ask, I sent you those topics and our chat that we had a couple weeks ago when we didn't have the recorder turned on, it seems important that we hear some of your stories about life before you came here to Madison, because I think it really helps sort of inform the work that you've done. And you said you grew up in Tulsa?
I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe we just start by, if you might describe what your the first home, or at least the first home that you remember living in Tulsa.
It was at 765 East Queen Street. It was just a ordinary house. I should say that I didn't live very much with my biological parents. My mother had me when I was 17, and apparently, when she was 17, apparently, I was sick. And so, some people saw me and saw my mother trying to care for me, and she was trying to finish high school. So they asked if they could take me and nurse me back to health, and she said yes. Something I just recently learned from my sister that she regretted. But anyway, my mother lived in Oklahoma City where I was born. And they lived in Tulsa. So they took me back to Tulsa. And when I was 7 years old, I don't know what happened between my birth and 7 years old. But I remember living in Tulsa when I was 6 or 7 years old. I remember somebody taking me for ice cream cone. And I went to Dunbar Elementary School, both in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. So I wavered between Tulsa and Oklahoma City in my childhood. And I ended up graduating from Booker T. Washington High School in Tulsa. In the meantime, from Dunbar to George Washington Carver High School, or Junior High School, then Booker T. Washington High School. And these names are important because they were named after Black heroes, all of these schools. And I grew up in a segregated society, which to me was normal. And it turned out that it was just fine because we had a community, an established community that cared about its children and saw that we did fine and that we had high aspirations and all. So the segregation didn't hurt me in terms of shaping my values and my outlook. The only thing that it did is that when I went into white society, I was really shocked and hurt that they had these stereotypes and expected so little of me because my whole childhood had been shaped differently.
So, and just to confirm, and then I want to get back, I think, a bit more to your childhood. When you went into white society, was that when you went to graduate school in Purdue?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was almost 30 years later. I was probably 28 or 29 when I went to graduate school.
Okay. So, to get back to a little bit more about your childhood, you mentioned some of the schools you went to, Dunbar, Carver, Washington. But what kind of student were you in those schools?
Well, I was probably near the top of my classes all the time. School wasn't a problem with me. And back in those days, there was no such thing as dropping a dropout or not going to school or whatever. School was paramount. You knew your teachers. You saw them at the grocery store. You saw them in church. You saw them when you were walking home from school. So.
Mm-hmm. So you just mentioned church. Was that was church an important part of your, mm-hmm, your childhood? Mm-hmm. What type or kind of church was it that you went to?
I went to Vernon AME Church. Vernon African Methodist Episcopal Church. So we were just saturated with the history of our own black experience and who we should become, and our role models were always there. The principal was an important leader in the community, and whatever he said, that's what took place. And the teachers were well respected. And I'm sure we had some delinquent kids, but for the most part, we had a well-knit community. And always had something that was going on to inspire us. Mm-hmm. We didn't have this, what they call achievement gap today. I never knew anything about it. There were always high, very high expectations. We had our own drugstores, own funeral parlors, own grocery stores, our own businesses, our own newspapers, everything. At the time, I didn't know that there was anything different, but when I look back on it, it was just a well-established community. And we knew about white people sort of at a distance. When you went uptown to shop, you could only go as far as 2nd Street. And all the stores on the other side of 2nd Street, you could not go into. But all the stores on this side of the street, you could. We had our own police officers. And the city had done an excellent job in defining the boundaries. So there were black policemen, black firefighters, black principals, black teachers. As I understand it, the school district set aside so much money for what they call the colored school district and gave it to the principals. And then they utilized, you know, those funds to keep the schools going. But as a child, I wasn't so aware of segregation. In terms of the, my early impressions of white people were not good, because they, when they did come into our community, they did terrible things. So, as children, we used to make fun of them and said, white man, sitting on a fence, trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. We do silly things like that. Of course, we had a riot in Tulsa in 1921 that I would hear my elders talk about. And then we had a, they used to rent washing machines, a ring of washer, washing machines. And Mama Touche would rent that every Monday. And the rental company was white owned. And I remember she got so mad at them, because when they came to get the washing machine from the back porch that day, they also stole some of her money that was, I guess, on the counter or whatever. And she was livid. So my interaction with white people was not on a daily basis, was more or less in a business setting. And because we have our self-contained community, we, and that community was very well defined in terms of taking care of his children, setting the values and the expectations. We didn't really have a lot of contact with white people.
So in your neighborhood then, were all these stores and shops and churches and schools all within walking distance?
Well, yes and no. Back in the 40s, a lot of people didn't have cars. 40s and the 50s. So we had buses that took us from one end of the town to the other. Just think of it as if you lived on the east side or the west side of Madison. That's what your community. And it was called North Tulsa. And North Tulsa was where black people lived. But we didn't live there out of pity or even because we thought we were segregated. That was our community. That's all we knew. And we knew not to cross boundaries. But as children, we had no reason to. Mm-hmm. We had good schools. And we always called our schools George Washington Carver, Paul Laurence Dunbar, or Booker T. Washington, because those were black heroes, and that was our way of instilling black history in us. So we grew up with black history.
Mm-hmm. So you always called them by their full, the schools by their full
mm-hmm,
names?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I want to move on to college, but I always want to make sure that if there's more things you want to say about your sort of pre-college time, you know, don't hesitate to either jump in with it or
okay.
So, was college always a part of the? As you were growing up, was college always a part of your
no,
future plan?
No. Back in the 50s, you have to remember that the 50s was a very different America than it is today. And except for, obviously, economics, black society was a mirror of what white society was. So the big difference was no matter how white people always thought themselves to be better than black people, even if they had less money or less education or less whatever. There was always this thing, is that you're less than. And there were actual laws in Oklahoma and elsewhere. Oklahoma is a southern state that said you couldn't drink out of this soda fountain, or you couldn't go this. You couldn't go to the University of Oklahoma, for example. Or Oklahoma State University. We had a college there called Langston University, which is a black university, one of the original HBCUs. So, and in high school, we used to go to Langston for weekend competitions, either academic competitions or sports competition. I mean, this world was so tightly woven till that's all you knew. I remember hearing about Ada Lois Scipio, who was the first black student to be permitted to go to the University of Oklahoma Law School. And I remember seeing the pictures of where, after she had won her court battle, the law school put admitted her to the classes, but whatever class she had, there was a curtain put up. So the white students were on one side and she was on the other side. And I thought, how stupid. I was really incensed by that. I remember that clearly. So in terms of going to college, yes, there wasn't a big deal made about it. The family that I live with in Tulsa, they were teachers, so they just naturally assumed that I would go to college. And one day, my aunt said to me, she wasn't my aunt, that's what I called her, and after I graduated from high school, she said to me in July, what are you getting ready to do with your life? And I said, oh, I guess, I just was so cocky, I thought, I'll just go get me a job in a downtown firm, in a law firm, or be a secretary. She knew that wasn't possible, but I did. Because I could type 100 words a minute. But anyway, she says, well, today, before the mailman comes, you are to write a letter of application to Talladega College, Dillard University, or Hampton University. To all three of them, she said. And so I did, and she said later that whichever one accepts you, that's the college you're going to. So Talladega, in Talladega, Alabama, wrote me back and said that I was accepted. I didn't know anything about Talladega, where it was, what it was like, its curriculum or anything. She just told me that's where I was going. So they put me on a train in September.
And what year was this?
1951.
Yeah.
And with a box of chicken and hog-head cheese. Because, you know, you couldn't eat on the trains either. You went into a separate door, which was all a new experience for me. But anyway. And they put me on this train and sent me off to Talladega. I think the train went to St. Louis, I'm not sure. And eventually ended in Birmingham. And I didn't know what to do, but at Birmingham, there were representatives from Talladega College that met every train that came in to gather up whatever students were coming into Talladega. Most of the students came from out of town, and a lot of us came from out of state. So there was Mr. Lawrence there. He says, are you going to Talladega? And I said, yes. And so they shoved me in some kind of car and off we went to Talladega. It was just about that straightforward.
You were 17 or 18?
Yeah. 34, 44, 54. Yeah, I guess I was 18. I cried the whole time. Yeah. I ached, my body ached, my ear ached, everything was, because I thought people were getting rid of me and abandoning me, but now I see it was for my own good. But that's the way I got to college. And they could afford to pay it, the tuition. I didn't know anything about financial aid or tuition or anything. I just went to Talladega.
So once you got there, I assume you had to register for classes. What did you think you wanted to do?
Well, I really wanted to major in chemistry. That was my first love in high school. I love chemistry. I thought it was the most fascinating subject in the world. And I had a good teacher. But then at Talladega, it was sort of unsettling for me my freshman year because I met so many intellectual champions and people who were smarter than I was, and I had never really experienced that. So I got cold feet and wouldn't major in science. Then I thought I wanted to major in music. But there again, the music major seemed to be so far ahead of me. I had taken piano most of my life. So I decided to major in English, something I knew I was good in spelling. So I figured I could handle that.
Did those changes, or those understandings and those changes, did those happen like within the first year, or was this something that you gradually...
I don't remember all that. I just remember by my junior year, I was an English major.
Okay. So, Talladega, where did you live?
In a dormitory. It was a small private college. Started in 1867, right after the honorable slaves were freed. They built this college.
Did you have a roommate?
Mm-hmm. It was a normal college experience. So, it's just a small college. We probably had 300 students total in all freshman classes. And it was considered one of the top HBCUs. It's noted for its science majors and for about 60 or 70% of Talladega graduates going to graduate school. But in my mind, there was no thought in my mind that I couldn't go to the University of Oklahoma. I didn't even know that it existed, or Oklahoma State University, or Stillwater College, or Tulsa Community Junior College. Your worlds were so separated. They were strictly separated, so you just walked in your path, and your parents and elders guided you